This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Dr. David Kelber. Dr. Kelber is the Chief Medical Informatics Officer at Metro Health System. He's going to talk to us about what being a Chief Medical Informatics Officer is, how he evolved into that role, what advice he has to doctors trying to have great careers, and more. Dr. Kelber, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Certainly. Well, really pleased to be here. Glad you're taking the time this afternoon to be part of the interview. So I'm an internist, practicing internist and pediatrician, and the Chief Medical Informatics Officer of the Metro Health System, which is a big public or safety net healthcare system here in Northeast Ohio, affiliated with Case Western Reserve University.
So a magnificent safety net hospital, a great system. You've got this great career going. Tell us when it was. Were you 10 or 12 years old when you said, what I really want to be is a medical informaticist? At what point did that dawn on you that that's actually a career and something one could do or part of a career?
Right. So actually, yeah, I didn't even know till I was in residency that the field of informatics even existed. But just to tell you briefly about my journey. So I was always very interested in science, really always wanted to be a technical person and a clinical person. My father is a physician. And then when I did my undergraduate work at Duke University, I actually majored in biomedical and electrical engineering, and then went to medical school at Case Western Reserve University. And then it wasn't really until my my residency, where I was trying to figure out how to combine my technical interests with my clinical interest. And I still vividly remember being on call one night. This is probably, 2 a.m. in the morning, classic patient story, right? So 2 a.m. in the morning, I was talking with another resident who was a year ahead of me. And I said, well, what are you going to do when you're finished with your residency? He said, well, I'm going to go, I'm doing a fellowship in informatics. And I was like, what was informatics? I mean, it's like one of those life-changing inflection points where as soon as I heard him describe it, I was like, this was the field that was, I never heard of the field before, but this was the field that was created for me. So, literally that was the divergence. And so I went off and to figure out what this field was and how I could be successful in it.
And so your father's a physician, right? That's what you said. Your dad's a physician by training?
Yes.
Or is a physician? Yep. So did he ever throw a book at you and say, no, over my dead body is my son going to be an informaticist?
No, I don't think he didn't know. When I first explained it to him, he didn't know what an informatics was either. I think, and many people even today, they just don't know what informaticist is, which is sort of interesting for me because as an internist and pediatrician, many people don't really understand what a med peds physician is either. So I sort of keep gravitating toward these fields of medicine that you get these quizzical looks from people about, what do you really do?
Now, so Kate and I, our producer, know exactly what an informaticist is, but for the benefit of our audience, and I say that facetiously, explain to the rest of us what a chief medical informaticist does, because we know, but we want the rest of the audience to know.
Sure. So again, there's lots of different definitions, or the simple different definition I try to use to explain to people. It's just trying to get technology to work better in healthcare, better for patients, better for quality, better for doctors, better for staff. Sort of one of the bylines I say for my team is, we're trying to exploit health information technology to improve health. And so I think in a big, big way, particularly what I would call myself as really like an applied informaticist as a chief medical informatics officer, it really is about exploiting all of these dollars we're putting into health information technology and healthcare to actually improve the health of our patients and provider patient satisfaction, efficiency, decrease costs, improve value, those types of things.
So you talk about being an applied CMIO versus a basic sort of science CMIO. You had this aha moment at some point during your residency where you sort of understood this is what an informaticist does. That sounds like a great part of my career, and talk about a couple of the aha moments over the last few years where you've been able to put data to use or put information to use in a positive way. Are there aha moments, or is it more just a grind through things to get better and better?
Yeah, I would say they're both. You know, so just to describe, you know, a couple of these. So even in my applied work, you know, I do some research, and, you know, big data is a huge area of research, you know, in academic medical centers. So, you know, one of my aha moments, this is actually when I was my first job right out of residency before I did my informatics fellowship, was that I was medical director for a pediatric weight management clinic, and I was seeing children that were being referred to me for their weight problem. And I would look and I would say, oh my gosh, not only do you have a weight problem, but you have a blood pressure problem as well. And, you know, people would say to me, parents would say, well, wow, you know, I didn't even know why children, you know, I didn't even know children could have a blood pressure problem, and no other doctor has told me this before. So it quickly made me ask the question then, well, if I'm seeing a few children with undiagnosed pediatric hypertension, is this a big problem? And so, you know, we have this sort of report request button, you know, in our healthcare system at the time. So I requested this whole set of data, and lo and behold, I found out that, you know, of the children that had high blood pressure based on data in the electronic health record, only about a quarter of them had ever had this diagnosis or this disease actually diagnosed. So we published this in JAMA. You know, and this ended up becoming one of the top 10, what the American Heart Association said was one of the top 10 breakthroughs in all of stroke and cardiovascular medicine back in 2009. So I think there can be those aha moments with the data. You know, another aha moment I would point to is actually with the personal health record. So I remember I was sitting in a meeting, and this question was actually posed by Judy Faulkner, who's the founder and CEO of the Epic Corporation. She said, who is the biggest user of your health information systems? And so basically myself, like everybody now, is always thinking, well, like, are there more nurses or doctors using the system? Maybe there's students, you know, so we're coming up with this whole list. And she said, you know, think outside the box. The biggest user of your health IT probably now and certainly in the future is going to be your patient, right? So the number of patients using your electronic health record through a portal is probably orders of magnitude above the number of your own employed staff or other people that are using your system. So think about your strategy, think about your resource allocation with a personal health record, you know, in that vein. And again, just to put a fine point on it, I think with COVID, you know, over the last 6 months or so, it's even become more imperative how vital the personal health record is. So there is the day-to-day improvements that we make or that we see. But again, I think at least in my career, and I've just given you two, I'd say there are, you know, at least a dozen or so of these sort of big inflection points where, you know, wow, we've really done something amazing or changed a big perspective through being a chief medical informatics officer and what we're doing in clinical informatics.
It's a talk about a chief medical informatics officer in the time of COVID, because especially at a safety net hospital, I mean, there must be great uses of data to try and figure out how you get better information to your community, to your population health, and so forth. What are some of the things you're seeing in sort of this age of COVID in your role?
Right. So I think, I guess there's two sort of, you know, informatics trends I would point to. One is sort of a huge catalyst for telehealth. So I think, you know, any CMIO who is sort of worth their money, they were doing something in telehealth. So, you know, we would all talk about we're doing something, but I'll give you the example for the Metro system. So in 2009, less than 1% of all of our visits were telehealth. So we were doing something, we were doing a couple thousand, you know, a year, and we thought that was great. Well, you know, here comes March, and, you know, we basically are put to this issue of, okay, everything's closing down, you do telehealth or you stop existing, right? I mean, that's basically what happened to most of healthcare. And so literally within, you know, a week or two, we had to figure out from going to less than 1% telehealth to basically going to over 80% telehealth. And you know, how do you do that, both from a technology standpoint, as well as all the non-technology things, both on the patient side and on the provider side? And even moving forward, you know, we really feel like, you know, one of the silver linings of COVID will be like, we're never going back with telehealth. So as an example, you know, our CEO has said that COVID or no COVID, our strategy moving forward is to be 50% of all primary care visits to be telehealth and 30% of all specialty visits to be telehealth. So I think one big piece of COVID has been this huge catalyzation of telehealth, you know, throughout the country. It's not just Metro. When I talk to my peers, they're all going through similar transformations. The other thing I would say is just briefly sort of a huge emphasis on the value of health information exchange and pooling data. So again, there's nothing like a pandemic in a sense to really get people to understand we've got to have access to data, not only in our own healthcare system, but other healthcare systems for public health use in real time or near real time. So I've seen a huge progression with that as well.
Now you're a from Duke, I think a double engineering major from Duke.
Yep, biomedical and electrical engineering. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, obviously, I mean, Duke is not UNC Chapel Hill, but still a magnificent institution. I kid you, obviously, it's the big rivalry. But I mean, yep. When somebody's a double engineering major as an undergraduate at Duke, I mean, and you've got a big personality, you must be the brightest guy in the room often. Without trying to be, you come across as very humble and just a pleasure to visit with, but what a great mix of personality and intelligence you must have.
I think, you know, I've some skill, some luck to where I got to. I think the other, one of the really other key things with informatics, I would say, is that you have to be able to work really, really well with lots of different types of people across the healthcare system, because, you know, in a sense, informatics really ends up being an enabler or a connector. But if you're not able to sort of work across lots of different domains, speak lots of different ways to lots of different people, you won't be as effective in your role.
Well, it really ends up true. I mean, you have people with magnificent analytical skills that be great communicators, have a special gift and a very important gift. Because when you think of somebody who's an informaticist, at least, you know, the stereotypical mindset is wrong, of course, but it's someone who's brilliantly in the computers, brilliantly in the books, but not necessarily brilliant at communicating. And you really need both skills to make any change, to make any differences in what you do and have an impact. So magnificent. And what do you look at? When you look at right now, when you look at your role as Chief Medical Informatics Officer, what do you look at as sort of your top three priorities currently in your role?
So certainly I alluded to this a little bit earlier, is that, I mean, we've got to think about care more outside of an in-person visit. So, you know, whether that be sort of synchronous telehealth, you know, video visits, which I think a lot of people think about now, you know, I think that's part of it. But I also think there's a lot more we can do with asynchronous communications. We're doing a lot of things with population health, which I think is huge. And again, part of that concept of, taking patients outside of the in-person visit. Just one thing we announced this past week is, I still haven't figured out how to do a virtual immunization, as an example. But what we're doing is, so we're doing virtual visits, but then we just opened a drive-through immunization clinic, right? So the idea is you can do a video visit with your doctor, and then if you need your flu shot or other immunizations, all you gotta do is drive into this one parking lot, stick out your arm, and we'll give you the immunization. You don't even need to get out. So I think, you know, definitely this whole concept of, I guess I'd call it sort of virtual care or care outside of in-person visits. That's huge. I guess a couple other things I'm thinking of, certainly, and from a regulatory side, you know, the big buzz in informatics now is all about the 21st Century Cures Act. So, you know, all of us are making sure that we've got our I's dotted and our T's crossed on that. And then I think, you know, I guess the third area I just point to is, you know, as we get more and more of this data, this whole concept of, you know, whether you call it predictive analytics, machine learning, artificial intelligence, you know, everybody has all sorts of different words for it. What's the there, right? So, I mean, these are buzzwords that people have talked about for a long time. We've got a lot of digital data. I'd say I still have yet to find sort of some of the killer apps, in a sense, or, you know, the sort of the killer workflows for these types of things. But I'm sure they're there because we've got, you know, a lot of great technology and a lot of great data. It's, you know, how can we put that all together to, again, something that's actually going to help the health of the patients that we're trying to serve?
Right. And that's like so many of these things. It's they get talked about for years, and at some point they really hit their useful stride. I mean, telehealth is kind of like that. People talked about it for years, but it wasn't until a huge pandemic happened that people were like, no, we need telehealth, and we need it now in a much bigger way. And a lot of with the predictive analytics, it's all over the board. Some of the stuff I've seen seems to be very useful on sepsis and predictive internally, who to spend resources on, where to spend resources and so forth, where to alert people on staffing models and other kinds of things. And others of it, there's a lot of discussion and not really sure if that helped, where they've made it consumer friendly enough for physicians and nurses and staff to make really useful. And it's a great, great point that you make on that. What a fascinating career that you're having. Give us 60 seconds, and then I'll let you go, I promise, on what advice you would give to a young physician trying to have an interesting career, a great career. What advice would you give to somebody?
Yeah, I think that's tough. I'm sort of living my dream job right now. And I think, you know, it starts with looking internally. I mean, you've got to figure out what really drives you. Again, so for me, I knew I had this passion for technology and for patient care. And so then it was trying to find the right outlet for that. So I think it starts internally. I think, again, at least for me, mentoring is very important, where you really want to, you know, understand from other people who are invested in you what opportunities are and, you know, how they'll help you. I guess I would also just end by saying, you know, I gain a lot from being involved in professional associations because I think that's a huge opportunity to network and sort of see, you know, what's out there as well. And I think particularly a lot of younger physicians don't take as much opportunity to participate in professional organizations for their professional development as they might.
And is there a support group for chief medical informatics officers?
There's unofficial support groups. Again, it sort of gets back to the networking. I mean, obviously some of the professional organizations which have sort of more formal support groups, obviously there's AMIA, the American Medical Informatics Association, HIMSS, you know, HIMSS is huge, but there's a sort of a part for CMIOs there. AMDIS, the Association of Medical Directors of Information Systems, and then even CHIME recently is getting into sort of some support group for clinical informaticists and CMIOs.
Well, fantastic. And I meant somewhat jokingly support groups, but the idea of being able to talk to your peers is obviously so critical to what one does and really learning and seeing what others are doing and trying to grow in one's role and help others in their role. So just a pleasure. David, just an absolute pleasure visiting with you. Magnificent. You've made chief medical informatics officers so much more interesting to Kate and I than we ever thought it would be. And we've learned a lot. So we really, really appreciate it. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.